day's a brand new morning since the morning you moved in.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Yes, I'm feeling like a million since I got you living in.
We're back on WPTF, the Weekend Gardener, whether you like it or not. You know, it's just, you have the power, but you can give us a call, too. You know, why not? What else do you have to do this morning? I mean, why would you want to go outside?
No.
Well, I have a question for our two
breathtaking
experts today.
That's Rufus Edmonston there.
I have a lot of folks say to me, okay, it is deathly hot, no rain, no nothing, but I am unable for a number of reasons to water early in the morning or water in the late in the afternoon, but I can during the day. Would it hurt my plants? I said, it is better to put water on them than have no water at all. Am I right?
We have Scott Zona, Dr. Scott Zona, who is the author of A Gardener's Guide to Botany, and he is the man kind of in charge. Are you in charge of the plant toolbox?
Well, I manage the
plant. You manage it.
Yeah.
All right. What doth you say, doctor?
Yeah, it's better to give them water than no water at all because in this weather, you know, plants are wilting. They need water even in the middle of the day. It's better than nothing.
Well, now, Phil, you water all the time, and you should know about what times of day you can water. I know yours are mostly greenhouse, but...
Okay. For perennials and annuals, I would be very careful about getting water on the leaves in the hottest part of the day because they will burn, especially things like begonias and impatiens and some of the softer
They can get over it, leaves. Though, can't you, rather than die of no lack of water.
Yeah, but sometimes if you burn the leaves, then they can get some disease from that.
Yeah.
Some type of fungus can set in. I mean, because they're already stressed anyway. I was talking with someone that went over to Duke Gardens, and they said that even the zinnias and things like that that normally grow really easy around here and grow
love
well.
Love the hot weather.
Yeah. They are just not much bigger than they were when they planted them.
Oh.
And, of course, they've got that overhead irrigation, you know, that is not real. It doesn't cover everything well. So, but for some things, I would say early morning, late in the afternoon. But I'm with Scott. I mean, some water is better than not watering at all.
Yep, that's it.
But just be careful for the leaves.
Water, water, obviously very important for plants. And how do they utilize the water?
Well, water is important in photosynthesis because photosynthesis is making sugar out of carbon dioxide and water. And the water molecule is split. The oxygen is given off by the plants. That's why plants give off oxygen. That oxygen is coming from the water molecule. And the hydrogen, the other half of the water molecule, is attached to carbon dioxide to make carbohydrates or sugars. So yeah, water is pretty critical. Plus, water is sort of that universal solvent that everything dissolves in, and so all the various chemicals that plants make are transferred or transported around the plant in basically a water solution.
Are we going to talk about the drought and about succulents and things like that? Plants that don't need a lot of water. Are they? We're getting back in. This is like 08, 07, somewhere in there where we were in that drought and everybody was buying a rain barrel and everybody was talking about xeriscaping and so forth. Hopefully we're not there yet, but we're going to talk to Billy out at the State Farmers Market. Billy, help us out of this. Do you have any water out there or is it cool? Are those big fans moving?
those big fans are moving. I went through the building this morning, felt that good breeze. And fans keep you nice and cool under there for most of the day.
It really does. We were out there earlier this week, and it it's amazing how much circulation, air circulation, is under there. And I know that the farmers appreciate it and the customers too. So, because there are a lot of people out there, I'm sure, even this morning and yesterday afternoon, even as hot as it was, I'm sure there were people buying all kinds of vegetables. So what are farmers saying to you right now? I know it's really tough commercially for on the especially if you can't irrigate. The corn farmers are having a tough time. What are the produce farmers saying to you?
It's all about irrigation. Those who've got good irrigation systems are not struggling like the ones who are having irrigation problems. I was talking to one of the farmers who is actually leasing a piece of land where his pond's at, and he had problems with the pond, so he's having to actually irrigate a mile down the road. Is run irrigation pipe over a mile to the farm to be able to irrigate.
That's incredible. What farmers are able to do. I mean, they're inventors. They can do it all. There are so many wonderful vegetables. This is really the best time of year at the farmers market to me, because there are peaches. There are still blueberries out there. I think strawberries are probably going away now. But the butter beans and peas and all kinds of corn, it's just a wonderful time. It's all good for you. You have all of that, don't you, Billy?
We do. I'm down here looking at one of the farmers that is unloading his shelled peas and butter beans this morning. He had Dixie Lee's and Purple Hole Crowders and. I was talking to him about it. He's like, man, he said, it's been tough, you know, keeping everything wet, but we've done it.
Yeah, I've had some extraordinary peas and fatback and butter beans and corn this year. It's that's my favorite supper, I think.
And I don't know if it's opinion or fact, but what the farmers are telling me is like peaches and watermelon. A lot of these things like a little bit of struggle, and it makes them sweeter.
Yeah. Drought will, as long as it doesn't kill it, it's going to make it a little sweeter. I think I've always heard that, Phil.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a scientific reason why that is, but you know, it seems to be a fact.
Well, it seems to me that when there's a lot of juice or a lot of water in the watermelon, that it dilutes the sugar.
I think it's just that simple. It's just if there's the plant's a little bit water stressed, it sort of concentrates the flavors.
They bloom. I mean, it's just like the annuals. When they're stressed, they bloom more because they're trying to reproduce themselves.
So you got all of that and new potatoes and what else? You got anything else under the farmer's shed this morning?
I was looking at all the varieties of tomatoes, like around, like one of the vendors had a slew of different color, like grape sized tomatoes, you know, and they were yellows and greens and oranges and reds.
Yeah, my wife brought home a bunch of those. They were all different colors, man. They're all good. And, you know, you sit them on the table, wash them off, and put them on the table, and you can eat them like a grape or something. So, Or Melissa likes to make a pasta dish with Parmesan and the tomatoes and stuff like that, and it's really good.
By the way, Billy, I went by yesterday and got some peaches from the wonderful folks at Sugarloaf Orchards. That's in Taylorsville, as you know. And more and more people are getting peaches, but mine were just wonderful. Nice lady Cindy Lowe. Has been there year after year, and I'm not singling out one, but Sugarloaf Orchards are really good from Taylorsville, North Carolina.
Are they one of your sponsors?
Well, one of mine, yes.
Yeah, I had some wind blows this week. Melissa cut up some wind blows, and they were that's the best peach I've had this year. And they're something that if you like canned peaches, they tend to last a little longer.
And you know, with Cindy Lowe, they have a Sugarloaf. That's a century old farm as well.
Right.
Wow.
I've seen a little.
And that's very important to Commissioner Trockler, those century farms. It's amazing to be passed down family to person to person and within a family like that for so long. And yep, a lot of plant vendors out there too, taking up a whole building.
Yeah, we have that whole bottom building is between. We have a few craft vendors in there, and the rest is just plants. All types of herbs and house plants and yard plants.
And up in the market shops, there's lots of food.
Yes, whether you want to eat it here or take it home and cook it, we got a little of everything. I was looking over at the meat counter across from the bakery at May Farms. They had all different types of meats and cheeses and milks, and then the bakery. I stand there trying to talk to him, and then all I smell is that cinnamon raisin bread. I get distracted real easy with scents and odors, so it's like, man, I like this place.
Yeah, I understand. It's really tough when we do a show there, do a remote. It's just
it's not really
so
that
alluring.
Tough, Mike, because they bring them down to us.
Oh, well, I know.
Oh, my goodness.
Doesn't mean I eat them. I try not to be sucked into that.
Well, Billy, yesterday's News and Observer had a nice article on 321 Coffee about how it started, how they
321, yeah.
321 Coffee. I call it 321 because that's the road leading to Boone from Lenore.
There you go.
Yeah. And they told about how it was started and how they used people with disabilities.
NC State business majors started.
Absolutely. And it is expanding all over the country now that they're roasting coffee for Fresh Market.
Yeah.
And other things. So that was that started it, did it not, at the farmer's market?
Yeah. It sure did.
And I was looking. They got their coffee where you can buy it at Whole Foods. And there was something they posted this week. And if you did happen to buy your coffee there, but then you came out to the farmer's market or one of their other locations, they had a coupon that you could use.
Wow. That's nice. Okay. Well, I hope they're always.
I don't remember the details of the coupon. If it was so much off or a free cup of coffee, yeah. What it was, I'm not sure. But I do remember that if you bought coffee and you got a coupon from one place, you could use it at all their locations. And we're so glad to have their starting location right here.
Yeah, I think I said Fresh Market. It should have been
Whole Foods.
Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
But there's so many things in that market shop building up there, including the Rufus dog at the Market Grill. Rufus has his own line of hot dogs, Doctor. And
did you know that, Doctor?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, so Rufus dog is specially prepared.
He made it.
Yeah. And there's a sign. Is there a photo? Do they have your photo
there
up there? Yeah. So there's a Rufus dog photo up there. and Rufus's photo, too.
And he's holding this hot dog, and it looks like it ought to be an art museum.
Yeah, I know. They're very, it's very gourmet. And let's see, what else do they have? Oh, they have hand cream in there that Rufus uses diligently to make his skin soft. I buy some of that, too. I buy the goat's milk and lavender. That smells good. Rufus, are we bothering?
Well, I'm going to show Dr. Scott here this picture of the Rufus dog.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if we were bothering you. You weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
No, wait.
Oh, it didn't do? Oh, my gosh. I'm... Well, anyway, tell them to make that picture bigger, Billy.
we'll figure it out before Scott leaves.
Yeah,
but it's great. It's mustard, slaw, chili, and onions. Mm-hmm. That's what you find on it. So, and you got the farmer's market restaurant. I'm more interested in the biscuits.
The biscuits. this is it. Get some biscuits, butter, and molasses. That's a meal right by itself.
Yeah. I mean, I could put a Rufus dog on a biscuit, too. That's an idea, Rufus. They're big biscuits.
Oh, man. I had one this morning for breakfast, by the way.
Oh.
I toasted it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And broke down and got one of those convection ovens. They did a fantastic job.
All right.
Those are handy little boogers.
Yeah. You get the seafood restaurant. They give you enough for several meals.
They do.
And you just eat yourself to death out there if you wanted to.
You can. Then stop by in the hunt and take some good stuff home.
Figuratively speaking, of course.
You're right.
You'll get some chitlins there, too, can't you, Billy?
Oh, you can get chitlins. You get the best fatback around, too.
Yeah, best sausage.
Fresh fatback with peas and butter beans is so important.
Perfect. I love it.
So we got Super Sod out there turning out the sod for all the people still trying to put out a. I guess if you got the water, you can put out some warm season sod.
Yeah, if you're having a little event at your house next week or whatever, get the irrigation right, come get some sod. You don't have to worry about trying to regenerate the grass where you have water. They'll hook you right up, tell you what you need.
Have y'all got any important events coming up?
We do. This coming week, July 11th, we have Summer Fest. And that's going to be a fun day. You're going to have stuff for children and coloring activities and other things. They're going to have grilling demonstrations. Come out here and learn how to grill. And
Rufus will have to go out there and get us a coloring book.
Oh, man.
Come get your
you know, they have those for adults. I love to color. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it a little bit with my grandsons, but I get it. I get the picture just right. I've colored it just right to suit me, and then my 3-year-old grandson starts drawing too, and he messes it up.
Well, he's doing a modern version, modern art.
That's right.
That's kind of the way I look at it.
The modern art. Don't stay within the lines. Don't do any color that that's appealing.
I mean, sometimes the colors just don't match.
Yeah.
Well, that's modern art.
What'd you say, Billy?
I said, I blame that on my grandkids.
Yeah, yeah, I know. They just,
somebody says, you didn't say a lot of old grandkids did that.
Don't mess up my coloring. So.
By the way, Billy, I mentioned a couple weeks ago the donut-type peach.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay, I went down there yesterday at Sugarloaf. There they were.
Yeah.
Yes, I asked them.
Yeah, they're are you familiar with that?
I've seen them, yeah.
Yeah, and the person that the first time I ever got one was in Wilkes County, which is right beside Alexander County, and the person said, taste it, because it looked funny. And I tasted it, he said, it's good, but they're not good keepers.
Hmm. Well, what's the purpose of them?
Well, to eat immediately, and not, I don't know how long they'll last. When I buy peaches, I leave them in a brown paper poke for about a week before I start to eat them.
A brown paper poke?
Yeah.
This sounds like the 1870s or something.
Well, that's all I knew when I went to the Three Forks Baptist Church, and at Christmas time, the Reverend Victor Trivet would say, don't forget to pick up your poke at the end of the sermon.
So you put the flat peach in a brown paper.
No, I don't put the flat peaches. I'm acknowledging that they were at the Sugarloaf orchards, and they're delicious.
But I don't like eating peaches with the fuzz on them.
Oh, I eat them whole. That's really a great thing.
That's what your blue
tickles
for, Mike.
You just kind of itches too.
Mike, you just take your blue jeans, wipe that peach around on, it'll get most of the fuzz off.
Okay, well, I'll have to remember that, Billy. Billy, you have a wonderful – yeah, anything else?
That's it for right now.
All right, well, you take it easy now.
All right, come see you.
All right, we will. All right. Lynn is in Raleigh. Lynn, we got a couple of minutes for news.
Okay, got a quick question about azaleas. We moved some summer before last, the very beginning, and they did great last summer, last fall, but they're looking kind of like they're not doing too well. And I'm wondering, would it be okay to put some root stimulator there? I know not to fertilize them.
All they need probably is water.
Water.
And less heat.
Yeah,
Scott.
Everything's suffering from the lack of water right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, don't do anything. No fertilizer. The fertilizer has salt in it, and salt's going to draw the moisture out.
Okay.
And I don't know about root stimulator. Does that have salt?
I wouldn't add anything to them right now except water. Clear your water.
Yeah.
And they'll be fine. They'll grow if they've got the water and the right soil.
And they're, some plants just kind of back off a little bit. And I don't know if they're protection. They go into dormancy.
Yeah. A lot of plants just shut down in this kind of heat, and they'll just sit there. They'll not look great, but they'll come back when the rains come back.
Yeah. And they may even lose some leaves.
Yeah.
So, but don't get too disturbed about that.
Yeah. I mean, everything, things that normally haven't looked bad in my landscape are looking kind of rough.
Yeah.
They're just not used to it.
Does that go for camellia too? Now, I know my azaleas, I've had great experience over the years. Told Phil coming in, I
got about a minute.
I got planted two from hers, and one is really, really down with dark leaves, and it looks like it's dead, but I hope there's hope.
Just cut it back a little bit. I know it's a little late, but just go in and cut it back and take some of the stress off.
All right.
Could I do that to the azaleas to
yes.
take a little bit of those off?
Borderline, but yes.
But just keep in mind that they've already put on their blooms, too, so you don't want to go crazy.
Yeah, you don't want to go too crazy, but I cut some back last August, and they bloomed.
And always, as they do here at Curtis Media, get rid of the dead wood.
It's better to save the azalea than to have a ton of blooms.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
Yep. All right, Lynn.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
All right. We'll talk to Stephen coming up here on WPTF. 919-860-9783. Mike Raley here along with Rufus Edmondson, Phil Campbell of Campbell Road Nursery, and Dr. Scott Zona, A Gardener's Guide to Botany, here on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. WPTF 936 WPTF time. You're listening to the Weekend Gardener. Stephen, thank you so much for waiting so long. How can we help you, sir?
Hey there.
Hey.
I've got a large oak tree that's dripping. It's like sap, but I know it wouldn't be sap. But I think somebody had told me it's something like honeydew or something from an insect. Anybody know what that would be?
So something on the leaf?
Well, I don't know. It just drips on the cars and the driveway.
Yeah, it sounds like honeydew.
Yeah, so is that an aphid?
Yeah, scale insects or aphids secrete basically a waste product that is sweet and
sticky.
Sticky, yeah. And mold will grow. Sooty mold will grow on it. Don't park your car into the tree if you can avoid it, but it's probably not hurting the tree at all.
All summer long deal?
Is it a big tree?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt it. It's natural to have some insects on trees.
Yeah, it's really important to look around the tree, look at the trunk, look at the base of the tree to see how it looks. The leaves we don't pay as much attention to, and the bugs that might be on, especially in an oak tree, it's so many leaves and so tall. But yeah, they have a lot of activity up there.
Yeah, and they'll be active all summer then, as long as the leaves.
Is it likely to be all summer?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for the information.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Is it messing up your car, or what is it doing?
Yeah, you just have to, no point washing it. Well, keep the windshield clean, but it's just sticky.
Be careful with that, if you value the car, because I don't know if it can mess up the finish if you leave it on there.
It covers the whole driveway, so I don't have a lot of choice there. All right, we'll move forward, whatever.
I know, just
take a big deep breath. And
you don't want to cut the tree down. That's the only alternative.
throw a tarp over the car.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it might be the way to go. All right. Well,
hey, you, Stephen, build a garage.
Yeah. Well, I've got one, but that's my garage. My wife's partner.
Oh, leave her out there. Yeah.
That's his man cave.
Wow, it's usually the other way around. Ooh. You've got quite an arrangement, Stephen.
Yeah, well, that's... I'm fortunate. I just
she's tolerant. Is that what you're saying?
What's that?
She's tolerant.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad. To have you.
Y'all are kind.
Yeah.
All right. Bye now.
Bye. All right. Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of things, interesting things going on with a tree. The symbiotic relationship between plants and insects.
And oak trees are great for wildlife because they support so many caterpillars and things that the birds rely on. So they're really important for wildlife. They support all kinds of insects, and that's good for
plus Chip and Dale.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, good. By the way, there's no kinship between the oak leaf hydrangea and the oak tree.
No, just a resemblance.
You like an oak leaf hydrangea. I do, too.
Oh, they're marvelous.
They are.
What's the one named? The little pink, the pink flowers? What do you call that one, Phil?
I don't know. Ask. I can't remember.
Well,
right
I mean, they're none of them really with pink flowers until they kind of fade into
pink,
don't
they? Right.
Yeah.
Well, mine started out little pink. And
Joe's
really,
got one.
Really
Joe the Bouncer's
now.
Got one.
See, we got a guy named Joe the Bouncer who's on the show, who's one of our listeners and
where
friends.
Are you, Joe?
Yeah, Joe and Susan have one. I can't remember. I was going to ask you too about the scale on crepe myrtles.
Mm.
Can you address that, or have you got any
insight into it? I don't have any insight into scale on crepe myrtles.
I don't know. I think I had aphids. I don't know. I have a huge, it's almost as big as a maple tree. It probably is. A Muskogee crepe myrtle that's, you know, 30 years old. And it was just the limbs and things were just kind of turning black. And the plants under it were kind of getting black. And I assume that was aphids. It looks great this year.
Pretty old.
You won't kill it.
No, but this scale, over time, I'm told, can harm the crepe myrtle.
Yes.
And I know there was a lot of distress, but we get distressed about everything.
Well, scale will. I mean, it will harm a crepe myrtle. And unfortunately,
will harm a camellia, too.
There's so many crepe myrtles that have been planted.
Yeah.
That's what part of the problem is. Excuse me. And so I had a couple of landscapers come in. They didn't know we were closed, and that's fine. They wanted to know if we had something to take care of that. And, of course, I knew where to send them, but to get some product. But it's
Where did you send them, and what did you send them for?
There's a product called Merit.
Yeah, that's been around for a while.
And that typically works. But you have to treat them pretty regularly.
That would require a professional, wouldn't it?
Yes. Dan actually trialed about three or four of them at the house that we had gotten in that had scale on them. We're not even going to bring in any crepe myrtles at all. A lot of nurseries are not even handling crepe myrtles right now.
Oh, my goodness.
Because of the problem.
Yeah.
So like red tip for a while.
Right.
Well, I hope it's not something, because we don't, I mean, you don't see red tips much anymore.
Right.
Here.
I know.
It's funny, I saw them overseas this year. I saw them in the Baltic states. It's very arid area, though.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just better suited for it. But
they,
I saw a lot of them there.
Maybe they just didn't plant too many of them.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. They plant a lot of olive trees, I tell you that.
We have a tendency to overplant when we like something. We have a tendency to overplant that same tree.
I know.
And
we have for so long with the crepe myrtle. It's part of a staple.
Every town has got their street lined with crepe myrtles.
Well,
some of the older towns.
Maybe this
I'm hoping it's going to be fine. Maybe it'll work itself out.
We've always had problems with sooty mold and just moldy type, aphids getting
on. Thinking about impulse planting, I did the same thing with red tips. And then that horrible, evergreen, my mind's gone, that everybody had to tear down.
Leyland Cypress?
Leyland Cypress.
The Leylands, that was the other thing.
I overplanted on both of those.
Right.
Cost me a fortune to have them cut down in both over the years. And it's that urge that, okay, I want to line this whole fence here with Leyland Cypress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want a whole row of red tips here and there, all gone. I've got two red tips left, though, that did not get disease on the entire 2.5 acres, and I watch them all the time.
Well, and I never heard of rose rosette disease until everybody started planting so many of the knockout roses.
Yep. Mm.
I mean, it went crazy. They're all along the state roads. Every place has got had knockout roses, and they're beautiful and they're easy, but not if they get rose rosette. And I mean my dad had roses the whole time I was growing up. I never even heard of it.
You have quite a large section about diseases in this book,
about how plants defend themselves against diseases. The plants that make all kinds of chemicals in their tissues to prevent disease and pest.
They're always having to fight off something.
It's a constant arms race between predators like insects and animals that want to eat plants and fungi that want to grow on plants, and then the plants and this constant arms race of plants having chemical defenses and then insects overcoming those defenses.
So how can we help them? We try with products like Merit, but are there natural things that we can do that really help?
Well, there are certain natural pesticides that you can use, but in my own gardening, I just try to work with nature, and I don't plant things that are really prone to insects and diseases. I find
you plant them in the right place under the right conditions.
A plant that's growing well and it's not under stress is going to be able to defend itself against predators better than a plant that is stressed
Give us an example of some of those plants. Coneflower, what?
You want something that'll last, Rufus?
I've never had a disease on a daylily. Coneflowers has never had a disease. Knock on the wood here, my knockouts have never got rosetta, and I do use the Bayer 3-in-1.
Mm-hmm.
I know you probably don't like pesticides, but that seems to work.
Why are there some plants that just seem to, they've just got all the defenses?
And our local predators don't seem to be very interested in them. It's interesting for me in my own garden just figuring out what the deer will eat and what they don't eat, what the rabbits eat and what they don't eat.
Right. Another reason to plant native plants?
Native plants are great for that, but native plants can also succumb to deer damage as well. It's not a guarantee.
Right.
I mean, I've become a big fan of calla lilies recently. I have a few in my yard, and the drought hasn't affected them. The rabbits don't eat them. The deer don't touch them. They don't get any other insect pests, and they're just bulletproof. So I've been really impressed with that.
They are, and plus they spread.
Yeah, and I use cut flowers in the house, and they last a long time in the house. So
yeah. Phil, do you have any Canta and calla lilies? Interesting ones.
We don't. We had those. We usually have those in the spring, and pretty much people won't buy those when they're not blooming for some reason. They don't understand that they'll be beautiful next year. They want color.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some of them have beautiful foliage. Yeah, not just green foliage, but green foliage is pretty too. But there are some that are
speckles
maroon.
On them. And, yeah.
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 I've noticed that my calla lilies are somewhat drought resistant. No fading on them. Now, once in a while, I had one that come up that looked like a rotten corn stalk, and I just cut it out of the whole thing. Obviously, it's a bulb. Is it bulb?
Yeah, it's a bulb.
It's a bulb.
Yeah.
Yeah, tuber.
And I don't know about canna lilies. They don't seem to have quite as much resilience as the calla lily in my shop.
Canta?
Canna lilies, yeah.
Canna lilies get leaf rollers on them.
Yeah, they
really
get insect pests. Although they, at least but in my garden, they outgrow
they'll
it.
They'll grow out of
and,
it. Yep.
And they flower. So.
I had some at the nursery that had, so I took them away from the sales area for a little while and went down there and checked on them, and they looked fine.
I used to, it seems like 20 years ago, canta lilies were blooming in August. But now they.
Yeah, they're, yeah, well.
Now they're blooming in June.
Right.
Now they're blooming in June.
Right. So.
Well, I got one blooming right now. It's about 5 feet tall, most gorgeous red thing. I love it. I'm going to cut it before it fades and take it inside to my lady.
All right.
Sounds like a good plan.
Why not do that?
That's great.
We haven't talked a lot about the drought formerly, but there are all kinds of plants, Scott, that like succulents. And succulents are very popular.
They are.
You know, I guess they're akin to the cactus and the agave and all kinds of things.
All those plants that have water storage in their leaves or stems. So, yeah, a lot of cacti and succulents.
I think people like the agave most because of
agaves.
Tequila. You have any agave? You don't like tequila, Bruce?
No. Oh,
I think I grow about 4 or 5 or 6 different agaves in my garden.
They're so interesting.
I love agaves.
Yeah.
They are.
So what makes them so drought resistant?
You know, these are plants that are from desert areas like in Mexico and the Southwest, and they have very deep roots and they have water storage in their leaves. And so, yeah, they can tolerate a drought like this is, you know, for them, it's nothing. They'll just wait it out. They don't grow. They just sit there until they get water, and then they'll grow again.
They're patient.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're opportunists when there is a drop of water.
And they've got really waxy surface of their leaves, so the water doesn't evaporate off their leaves or through from their leaves very easily. So they laugh at this kind of drought.
Yeah. So does a yucca plant.
Yeah, yuccas are the same. Yeah,
that little funny story one time. I wanted to move a yucca plant, and I didn't know how to do it without getting killed. I lassoed it. I took a rope like a cowboy and lassoed it and pulled it out.
Yeah.
Now, some
did you
years.
You have your boots and hat on?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Some years.
And chaps?
Beautiful bloom. None the past 2 years. I don't know what brought that or doesn't bring it on. But I've had no blooms the past 2 years of the yucca.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you can't kill one.
Maybe it's too happy. I don't know. Stress? This stress, I've always heard, brings out a bloom.
It often does, yeah. It often does. And, yeah, maybe something like too much water or too much nitrogen fertilizer would.
Well, it is an area that I have to water other things, yeah.
Because yuccas don't really need a lot of water. They're pretty drought tolerant.
And we do that with a lot of plants, house plants, outdoor plants. We overwater them. And probably not in this kind of weather outside, but. That's something we tend to do.
Well, it's just as bad, though, if people go along and do a little brush and don't soak it down.
Right.
I had to get on a helper the other day, not Palmer, but another guy, about just a little brush of those. I said, look, you just will not water it unless you stand there and let it soak a little bit.
Yep, you're just aggravating it. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
You're just aggravating it a little bit and not even trying to.
Because I said the roots are all down there. Those roots need the water is what it need the.
You have
nourishment.
You have to water it really well. And the most important part is you have to let it dry out again. Because if you keep it wet, you're going to kill it.
Well, I had to teach somebody a lesson about tomatoes on that. He was watering tomatoes both in the morning and the afternoon. I said, and they were getting pitiful. I said, you're drowning them. You're drowning your tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, even though they're made up of a lot of water, mean, they're mostly water, but they don't.
But I go for one time a day on tomatoes if they're in a pot. Yeah. By the way, the one that's produced the best for me this year is Park's Whopper.
Hmm.
Have you had those?
Yeah. Is that an old variety?
It is.
Yeah,
it's been very
around.
Old.
Yeah. Do you grow tomatoes?
I do, and this year, for whatever reason, I've had a horrible problem with blossom end rot, and I've never had that before. This is the first time I've experienced it on my tomatoes. And I grow them in they're in big containers.
Yeah.
And the ones I put out in the ground, the deer eat them, and I can't imagine why a deer would want to eat a tomato plant, but they do. So, but the ones in containers have had blossom end rot, and it could be that I wasn't good about regular watering. Maybe they did dry out a little too much, especially in this kind of weather.
But it also has something to do with calcium.
Yeah, but it's calcium deficiency exacerbated by irregular watering. So I don't think it's calcium deficiency because I do fertilize them and we have hard water. But I was probably not good about keeping them.
They're just the hardest vegetable there is to grow, or fruit, whichever you consider.
Well, I don't know. I grow them. I've always grown like the little cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, they're easier.
And they're super easy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're almost bulletproof too.
Right, they are. But the bigger ones.
But the bigger ones are a little fussier.
All kinds of problems. Do we need to take a break, Jason? Or okay, well, we'll just sit here and talk then. I want to continue talking about. The drought and plant. What are some plants that you could think of that are really drought tolerant besides the succulents, the cacti, and all of that? Doctor, can you think of anything?
I'm just thinking of what's in my garden that's doing well right now. A lot of the plants from the Mediterranean, like rosemary and thyme and oregano, those herbs, those are doing fine in my garden, and they get a little bit of water occasionally, but. But even with this drought, they're doing okay. But again, they're from parts of the world where they're accustomed to getting dry weather and drought. So I'm trying to think of some other plants that are doing well in my garden despite the drought.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Phil, Rufus, what's surviving on your planet?
Oh, hellebore.
yeah, that's true.
Now, they have wilted down some.
Yeah.
But I mentioned coneflower, daylilies, the beautiful Mexican sunflower doesn't seem to wilt any, and the knockout roses.
How about that?
Right. I'll tell you something else that I've noticed that seems to be doing, withstanding the heat, is the buddleleia. The butterfly bushes.
Yes,
the butterfly bush.
They're doing great.
Yeah.
I mean, they are great.
Yes.
I've got one. It hadn't had a drop of water except the rain that hasn't come.
Yeah.
I've got, we've talked about coneflower. I've got some of the geranium, the Roseanne. It's the perennial geranium.
Yeah.
I've got, I think, there's some lavender. You talked about
lavender,
herbs.
Yeah.
Lavender's doing well. There's a lady.
People need to, when that lavender, cut it back, it will come back.
Yes.
I mean, when you cut back the bloom down to the next leaf, it will come back again.
Right.
Phlox has been done very well.
All my conifers are doing well. The junipers and the pines, all the conifers on my property look great.
I've got a pine and three red buds that I planted last year. I have not put a drop of water
what
on
kind
it.
Of pine?
Is it a black?
Black pine?
Black
Japanese
pine.
Black
yes,
pine?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you see them on the coast.
I got it from Alan. He gave it to me, and it is so beautiful, but I have not put any water on that tree, and I planted it last year.
Yeah.
I have not put any water on my red buds.
They're almost
doing
contorted.
Well.
They're kind of unusual, the black
pine. I know,
pine.
They're pretty.
I know, I really like them.
Yes.
I love pines. The longleaf pine, North Carolina's, the pine is North Carolina's tree, but the longleaf pine is a great deal of symbolism for North Carolina. It is such a interesting tree because it seems, you know, when there's a fire, forest fire or something, that's when it seems to send out its seeds and reproduce. Yeah, I'm sure I'm.
No, you're
ruining this.
No, you're right on track.
That kind of makes it unusual in a way.
It is, and a lot of the pines in the southeast, and I'm from Florida, where the pines do this as well. There, they are very tolerant of fire, and fire is a natural part of the ecosystem. Will sweep through. It'll eliminate all the underbrush, and some of the pines even have cones that don't even open until they've been exposed to a lot of heat from a fire, and that the cones open up, the seeds come out, the seeds germinate under in that nice open area with all the ash, which is full of fertilizer, and they germinate and they grow up without the competition. So pines are great.
I'm sorry.
I was the last time we were at the Governor's Mansion. We saw the longleaf pine there.
There's some longleaf pine at the Governor's Mansion. They don't like clay.
The Governor's wife, Christian, I said, "Well, how do you get those to grow?" She said, "Plant more than one." I don't.
Want a family. Of them.
Have you ever heard anything about that?
No, I don't know anything about that.
I'll tell you one of the prettiest drives to me is to go down US 1 towards South Carolina and see the sand and all the longleaf pines.
And there's a longleaf pine there in one of those forests near Southern Pines that's almost 500 years old.
Wayman Forest?
Yeah. And we'll be back after the news here on WPTF.